Welcome to Blindspot, an audio podcast series about forensic science and the role forensic experts play in our judicial system. The name Blindspot comes from the fact that forensic experts can see and hear what laypersons cannot. Forensic experts reveal the blind spot in court using their experience and expertise as forensic scientists.
Welcome to Blind Spot. This episode, we have a guest with us, Alan Combs, who I share a position on the American Board of Recorded Evidence with. I've met Alan years ago. He's an outstanding audio and video forensic expert with over a decade of pro audio and multimedia experience. He's highly trained and recognized for his ambitious commitment to the field of media forensics. Alan began his career in multimedia technology and audio engineering. He spent years in professional sound and video production before expanding his training into forensic analysis and expert witness testimony. And here's a real important part. After working closely with leading forensic audio and video expert Tom Owen in New York, Alan established his own company, Combs Forensic Services. Alan has completed numerous certification programs and is actively engaged in continuing education in forensic advancements on a regular basis. Alan, thank you for being with us today on Blindspot. So, what clicked for you when you decided that you wanted to get into audio and video forensics?
Well, I think I have a similar background to you in that I started out as an audio engineer. I was always really into music when I was a kid, and it kind of came naturally to be interested in and involved in recording it, just kind of as, you know, if you like music, then you have to learn how to record it so that you can reproduce it. And the technology and the science has always been really interesting to me, and ever since I was, I don't know, maybe like 12 or 13 years old, I bought like this four-track tape, analog tape, four-track machine that you could, you know, layer your own voice like four, five, six, eight times, you know, and play different instruments. And so I really got into the science of recording and things like that. And so, like I said, I started my college career and my first business as an audio engineer. And I did mostly music production, which, you know, satisfied my need for creativity as well as you know, the science aspect that provided enough money to pay the bills, you know, and make a living instead of living in a van somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And, so I did that for, gosh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I think. I was doing full-time music production. I did a lot of work for record labels and some independent people, but mostly record label work. I also did film post-production and some live sports broadcasting for Comcast. And in a short period of time, I really had kind of made a name for myself and was, you know, I really enjoyed the work. But then 2008, 2009 kind of hit, and the economy tanked, and all of the clients that I had were either dropped from their label or they were given ultimatums like, you know, nobody's buying records anymore because nobody has any money. You know, people aren't going to shows anymore. People aren't buying your t-shirts. So we're not making any money off of you. So unless you, you know, can produce something that sells, we're going to drop you off our label. And so bands were coming to me, who, you know, who I had done their debut record for like, you know, $25,000 or something. And they were now saying, hey, can you do my second record? And I was like, yeah, sure. Great. What's the budget? And they would say, well, it's five, you know? And I was like, yeah, that's, If you take all the hours that it takes to make a record and you break it down in an hourly rate, that would be less than a minimum wage job. So I wasn't really interested in doing that. And I had the option to say, okay, well, am I going to go back to the days of paying my dues and work for next to nothing while I build up my reputation and hopefully the economy kicks back up and, you know, things will be good again? Or do I try and find a new way to make money with the skills and talents I already have? And so what I did is I started looking online for alternative careers for audio engineers, and I had a few post-production studios who had offered me positions, but that was really, it was just a job, you know, and I had been an audio engineer for several years by this point, and I knew that the reason that I had stayed an audio engineer for so long was because music was satisfying creatively, and it kind of kept my brain engaged. Doing, you know, editing cat noises for some film was not going to do that. You know, it was the level of engaging activity that would happen from doing post-production or some of the other options out there was not going to be something that was going to keep me engaged long term. And so I tried to find something else that I could do that was going to be interesting to me, but also use the skills that I already had. And I found an article online about alternative careers for audio engineers, and one of them was forensic audio. And when I read it, I was kind of skeptical because there isn't a whole lot published on whether or not that's a real job.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there was a lot of information about what it is to what you do as a forensic audio expert, but nothing says, you know, there's X amount of forensic audio expert jobs. You know, here's how to go about starting on this career path. You know, they don't say that. In fact, I actually looked up, you know, different job openings on, you know, like Monster.com or some of those other sites, looking for anything that had to do with audio and forensics or media, you know, things like that. And, you know, I think I found one out of all of my search, and it was like for some, you know, some basically somebody in Arizona was finally retiring from the police department, and they needed somebody to fill his spot. And it was the kind of thing, it said on there, you know, career path outlook is pretty poor because people who are in that position usually stay in that position. And when they leave, they usually are replaced by somebody who's already in the system. So I was trying really hard to find a way to get into it. And the article was written about Arlo West, who lives in Maine. I don't know if you know him.
No, I don't.
But he's also another guy that trained with Tom originally. Anyway, I looked him up and I called him and I said, hey, you are the only person who will talk to me that... that is doing this. And I said, I have some questions for you if you'd like to answer them. And he said, yeah, absolutely. So I asked him, is this a real job? And he said, yes, it's a real job, and you can make a living doing this. And I said, what should I do to get into this? And he said, you know what, you should talk to Tom. And I said, okay, what's his number? And I called Tom and went out and did some training with him. And I could not find, out of all the questions that I had for him, I could not find one of them that didn't support the fact that I could do it. And so I came home from that training, and I started my own company the very next day, and I started doing the things that we had talked about to try and get going with it.
Absolutely, and you probably are using similar tools as an audio forensic expert that you were when you were an audio engineer.
Yeah, I do. Actually, it's a little bit interesting to talk to people who have not been an audio engineer and are doing audio forensics because they use tools that I would typically kind of stay away from. But I think the reason is it's money. It's about money. You know, the program that I use is an Avid product, and it is, when I bought it, it was like $16,000, and it was kind of the barrier to entry for getting into professional audio production. And, you know, now there are tons of project or programs that, you know, only cost a couple hundred dollars that you can do similar tasks with. And for forensic audio, you're not really mixing 60 tracks into one, and you're not doing a lot of the things that you would do with production. So it makes it kind of easier to go to some of those lower end programs. But I found that I had invested enough time into the one that I use that I was really fast and more efficient with the more expensive program that I use. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of programs that are the same. Obviously, the techniques are the same. The knowledge of, like, how to manipulate audio using, you know, equalization, compression, how to do gain adjustments and things like that. That all comes from the audio background that I have as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can totally relate to that, having a similar type of a background. So what do you see in your field of view, so to speak, that is going to happen with this industry? You think it's going to continue to expand and there's going to be a need for more experts like us, or do you think it's going to contract? Tell me your thoughts about where you see this industry headed.
Well, I don't see how it could not get bigger and more involved. I think it's an interesting contrast to being in the music business, because the music business that I was in before has been dying and changing, you know, for many, many years, and it's been a downward thing. And when I started to get into that, you know, I had this idea of where it was going to be and where I was going to be able to be in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And, you know, obviously things have continued to go downward from there. The contrast is, when I think about audio and video forensic work, with the increase in technology and availability to consumers, the same technology and availability that killed the music business is contributing to a huge rise, I think, in the amount of audio and video that needs to be fixed or that is available to law enforcement and, you know, the legal system that needs to be used as evidence. And so I think there's going to be a huge increase over the next several years, and a need for people like us to do what we do.
I hear you. So the need for training, there's certainly not a lot of options for somebody like us to take continuing education. And I go to the University of Colorado International Association for Identification, try to keep up on all of the training options that are out there. And you mentioned previously that you were actually writing a program that you're going to be teaching. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. There are very few opportunities for people who are not law enforcement to train and get the knowledge and the skills to do this kind of work. You mentioned some of those organizations that offer training. That's another great thing about the ACFEI and the ABRE is we're putting together a program there as well to offer certifications, and I think that's going to be great. One other thing that I'm doing, like you said, is I'm preparing a introductory to audio forensics class that I will be teaching for Resolution Video, and they'll probably offer the class, you know, 3 or 4 times a year in different locations, but it'll cover the real basics, you know, what is audio and how does it apply to forensic purposes, you know, and you know, audio enhancement type techniques and best practices, things like that. So that should be a good opportunity for me as well as other people to be able to get some more training.
Yes, I completely agree. You and I took a program. Resolution Video's main trainer is Dorothy Stout, and a few weeks back, you and I and a couple other ABRE members took her training out in Portland, Oregon, and I found it to be very fascinating in a lot of regards. But I think the biggest aha that I walked away with from that program was realizing that I knew more than I thought I knew about forensic video.
I think one of the things that I have always admired about you and about some of the other colleagues that we associate with on a regular basis is that they are gung-ho for training. And I think that's one of those things that you really need to always do, is stay on top of training, because you don't know what you don't know. And you're not going to, you know, I think in other careers, you know, the longer you're there, the more you can feel confident in the fact that you know everything and, you know, you're the senior person. But that doesn't really work that way in this field, because it keeps changing. So the older you get, probably the more training that you need to do so that you can stay on top of the emerging technologies. And I think that, like I said, there aren't very many opportunities, but I think it's important for you to take advantage of the ones that are available and be involved and take part in those classes.
You know, and it's kind of a two-way street. You know, as I was sitting there, I feel like I offered some information to the class and to Dorothy in addition to soaking up all of the information she was presenting like a sponge. And by the way, Dorothy is going to be on a future episode of Blind Spot. Dorothy Stout, who is the lead trainer at Resolution Video and the person you're going to be working with on this program. If people wanted to find out more information about that training, Alan, how would they get information?
Well, you could check the Resolution Video website. It's resvid.com, R-E-S, not a Z. There's a schedule there for scheduled trainings. And I think the first one's going to be in April sometime. And then, like I said, we'll probably schedule, you know, three or four a year after that.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I'll certainly be in one of those audiences.
What
has been your one of your number one challenges as you've moved into audio and video forensics, Alan? Is it testifying? Is it keeping up with the times? What has been your number one challenge?
I think I'm pretty young, so keeping up with the times in this field is actually probably not a challenge for me at this point. But I'll tell you what is, coming from music, I really want everything to be perfect. And it bothers me sometimes when somebody will give me a horrible audio clip that I can't make pristine, you know? So that's probably one. For example, I had a DEA wiretap where they basically had coerced this guy into selling large amounts of some of the chemicals that you use to make meth with, and they got him on tape saying the things they wanted to say, but there was a lot of they went to a bar to have this meeting, and there was really loud music in the background. And there was lots and lots of people there. And so you could hear the police officer really well and not so much the informant, except for the times that he, that they wanted him to be heard. And he came to me and said, hey, I think this has been edited. Can you tell me if, you know, it's been edited? And I said, well, let me start with just an enhancement. And we can see if we can hear what you're saying, you know. And like I said, it's so poor quality that there wasn't a whole lot that I could do. I mean, I can always make it better than what you give me, but
right,
it really
right.
frustrated me when I couldn't get it all. And I ended up giving it back to him and saying, well, I couldn't get it all. I got a lot of it, but you still can't hear portions of it. And I think, you know, those are the portions that you were really interested in and, you know, sorry. And, so one of the things that I had to learn is that, you know, some things are beyond, you know, what you can do. It's not like CSI where you can zoom in on a squirrel's eyeball and see the reflection of the killer from 50 feet away, you know.
Now that's a great example.
Well, that's the kind of stuff you see on, you know, the CSI TV shows. Like, oh, well, let's just, you know, plug this into my supercomputer and da-da-da, oh, there's the answer, you know.
Right.
But what I realized is that my job is not to get the results that the client wants necessarily, but to make it the best that I can make it. And sometimes there isn't much you can do. But that's hard sometimes to accept.
Right. Right on. Well, thanks for taking time to talk with us today, Alan. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, what email and phone number should they use?
So my website is combsforensics.com, and you can reach me that way. I have my phone number and email address on there, but it's just alan@combsforensics.com, and my phone number is also on the website is 404-1533, and it's a 425 area code.
Excellent. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate you joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This concludes this episode of Blind Spot. If you subscribe to this podcast, you'll be notified of future episodes as they're produced. We welcome your comments and questions at primoforensics@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.